Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we're rejoined by Nancy Pearl, our longtime book reviewer and author, with some selections for spring reading, as well as some excellent ideas for books you might have missed this past year. Nancy is a former librarian with the Tulsa City County Library when she began doing book reviews for KWGS. Later, she moved to Seattle and founded that library's Washington Center for the Book. She's the author of a novel and several books about recommended reading, including her latest, The Writer's Library, co-authored with Jeff Schwager, a series of interviews with noted authors like Louise Erdrich, Michael Chabon, Jennifer Egan, and Jonathan Lethem, discussing the books that were important to them as they were formulating their life as a writer. Today, she offers her own selections of recommended reading today on Studio Tulsa. Nancy Pearl, it's been way too long. Thanks very much for joining us, and welcome back to Studio Tulsa.
Thank you, Rich. It seems as though we just lost 2020.
We did.
But it's so nice to be back with you, and I have a long list of books that I hope we'll get to talk to, if not today, then in the weeks and months to come.
Well, let's go ahead and get started. I noticed a number of your books are comic books, but this first one is certainly not. And it's Scott Anderson's The Quiet Americans.
Yes. So Scott Anderson is the author of the book Lawrence in Arabia, which was a wonderful, you know, the most recent biography of T.E. Lawrence. But, if you look at the title, we usually think of him as Lawrence of Arabia. But what Scott Anderson does in all of his books is really give context. So you just leave one of those books, you finish reading one of his books, and you just feel like you know so much more than you did going in. And The Quiet Americans, because, of course, it's nonfiction, although the title refers to Graham Greene's novel, The Quiet American, The Quiet Americans has the, you know how every nonfiction book needs the colon and the good subtitle. So the subtitle of this book is Four CIA Spies at the Dawn of the Cold War, A Tragedy in Three Acts. And this is a book about the first 15 years of the CIA, which grew out of the OSS. It talks about the major players, including Frank Wisner, who was the head of European operations. And Frank Wisner did not have a particularly distinguished career. He failed in Albania, he failed in Estonia, he failed in the USSR, and, you know, had to deal with those failures, those big political failures that, of course, you know, did not cast the CIA in a very good light. Ed Lansdale, you know, was at work in the Philippines, Vietnam, and interestingly, he's the basis for The Ugly American, that novel by Burdick and Lederer, and maybe also for The Quiet American,
right,
for Graham
right.
novel. You know, the saddest part, I think, of the book is the Hungarian Revolution in 1956, where the CIA betrayed the Hungarians. You know, I think that what you get out of this book is be careful what you wish for, because the unintended consequences can come and destroy you. And one of the examples that Anderson talks about, of course, is the CIA's role in installing the Shah in Iran. And, you know, so this whole book just reverberates with the past, but shows how we're still living with the repercussions of that. So it's a wonderful book. It's very, very, very readable. And I think, Rich, you would like this book because you do like this kind of book.
It's interesting. I've read a little bit about Ed Lansdale. Of course, he was the one that really pushed getting into Vietnam.
Right.
When the French couldn't make headway in Vietnam, he yeah. was the one that was saying that, hey, America's got to take this up. So is the whole book basically these sort of misguided notions from these American agents?
Yes, it is. And, Scott Anderson doesn't hide his point of view. It's not a book that is even-handed in any way, but it's a book that gives you a really good sense of the history.
That's Scott Anderson's The Quiet Americans, Four CIA Spies at the Dawn of the Cold War, A Tragedy in Three Acts. That's a long subtitle.
Yes.
But the next book is just a very short novel titled The Unquiet Dead by Asma Khan.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of us are looking for really good mysteries, and this is one of the best mysteries that I've found in a long time. And this is a mystery that is also available as an audiobook, and it's an excellent audiobook as well. But the main character in this book is a Muslim policeman in Toronto. Isa Katak works with refugee and immigrant groups in Toronto. His assistant, the young policeman who works with him, is a young woman, not a Muslim, Rachel Getty. And in this book, it's one of those books where there's a crime in the present, but that crime has its roots in the past. And the past that has led to this murder in the present is the war in Bosnia at the beginning of the 1990s. Mm. And I love books like this. Now, I have to say, I love The Unquiet Dead. It's the first of a series. The second one, I enjoyed as well. But I have to say that I started reading the third one and discovered it was basically the same plot as the first two. So I don't recommend going any farther than the second one, unless you adore this book. And it does give you a very good picture of a city, of Toronto, that is trying to deal with the influx of immigrants and what it's like to have somebody on the police force whose job it is to work to bring those immigrants into, you know, the weave of the city.
I've always felt like there's two types of detective novel readers or, you know, procedural readers. And That's one that always wants a very different novel from the last one. And the others that like the same novel over and over just
right.
With a few details changed.
Right.
And it sounds like Asma Khan has sort of fallen into that routine. And of course, there are, you know, some great detective novelists that made huge careers writing the same book over and over.
Yes, they did. But after a while, and I'm not saying this about Asma Khan, but after a while, you sort of get the feeling that those people are just phoning in the book.
Yep.
You know, I mean, they've expended all of their energy and imagination on those early books.
So what drew you to these two books at the beginning of her series?
You know, I feel as though I learned something from every book I read, fiction or nonfiction. And the life of a Muslim policeman who is a religious Muslim was interesting to me. And then I have to say also, although I didn't know this when I picked up the book to read it, anything having to do with Bosnia and the war in Bosnia, I find just so interesting because of the time I spent there a few years ago. Bosnia is a place that I love to read, that I'm very interested in.
Well, our next book is by Emily Nemens, and it's titled The Cactus League. And that sounds like a baseball book.
It is a baseball book indeed. Emily Nemens is this young writer. She's in her early 30s, and she is the editor, newish editor of the Paris Review, which is, you know, just it says a lot about the kind of writer and the kind of thinker that Emily Nemens is. But The Cactus League is indeed a baseball book. It's a very smartly written, character-driven novel in 9 stories. And, of course, there has to be 9 stories, because how many innings are there
right.
in a baseball game? So for spring training, which we have just finished and the season has begun, there's 2 leagues. There's the Cactus League, which is the teams that do their spring training in Arizona, and there's the Grapefruit League, the teams that do their spring training in Florida. This is set in Arizona, and it's a fictional baseball team called the Lions. And this is really a baseball book for people who don't love baseball. And I have to say, baseball is, you know, is the least of my favorite sports. But I love this book because it's so well written and because what Emily Nemens has done in each of these 9 stories is focus on someone who has either a tangential relationship to the Lions baseball team, for example, a concession stand worker, or someone who is closer to the team. There's a story about one of the owners of the team. There's a story about the pitcher who has gone through Tommy John surgery and is trying to see whether he can regain some of his former talent. And there's also, because I was a big fan of the movie Bull Durham, I was really happy to see that there was a couple of stories about the hangers-on, the older women who are interested in the baseball team in one way or another. So, you know, think Annie Savoy, that character in Bull Durham, and that sort of character appears in this book. And there's a story about the team's organist, you know. So, and that's why I said it's a book about baseball that you don't have to love or even know anything about baseball to enjoy. The characters are so interesting and the writing is so good.
And so there are a set of nine interconnected stories?
Right, yes. Yeah. Yep.
Emily Nemens, The Cactus League. Now, when I saw the next book, I said, oh, here's another baseball book, but it's very different from baseball. It's Mary Morris's All the Way to the Tigers, and I thought of the Tigers. I thought of the Detroit Tigers.
Yes, so Mary Morris is quite a prolific writer. She's written a series of travel memoirs in the past as well as novels. And I've been a fan of Mary Morris's writing for a long time. You know, but I'm not a huge memoir fan. So I picked this up because I liked Mary Morris's writing, but I didn't expect a lot of it. But it ended up being one of my favorite books of last year. So in 2008, Mary Morris and her husband were skating, ice skating in, you know, the ice skating rink at Rockefeller Center, and she fell and really just had a horrific accident. Her leg was severely damaged. There was some question whether she was going to walk again. Before this accident, she had been planning a trip that she was looking forward to, planning to write another book about the trip, and here she was, stuck with nothing to do for months and months and months except get this leg healed. And she picked up, she was reading Thomas Mann's Death in Venice, and she read this sentence. Well, actually, it's three sentences. He would go on a journey, not far, not all the way to the tigers. And what she decided when she read those sentences was that when she recovered, she would go all the way to the tigers. And she did. And this is about the series of trips that she took to find the tigers. And one of the things that I learned, silly me, is that I didn't realize that tigers are only in India.
Yeah.
I mean, I always thought you found tigers in Africa as well. And like Bosnia, almost anything that's set in India or that takes place in India, I find really interesting. So this is a book, I think when you're talking about travel memoirs, I think that what you want the author to do is kind of weave together accounts of what I saw, how I came to understand myself better, and what I learned about the world. And I think Mary Morris's memoir here doesn't skimp on any of those. They're all there. I really enjoyed this book.
Mary Morris's All the Way to the Tigers. My guest today is Nancy Pearl, our longtime book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa. It's been over a year since we've talked to her, and it's so happy to have her back with us here on Studio Tulsa. She's got mostly these are books that came out in the last year, although I think a couple are a little older than that, and then some are quite a bit older than that. I assume they're reprintings, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, the next book is a relatively new book, and time for the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, and that's Bridget Quinn, She Votes, How U.S. Women Won Suffrage and What Happened Next.
Yeah, this is a wonderful, wonderful book. It's an oversized book, which, you know, makes it very hard to shelve in libraries. But it's a book that I can see people giving as gifts to high school graduates or it's a book that's there's so much information in this book, and it's presented in such a dynamic way that it's a pleasure to read. And you come away from this book having learned an awful lot. So what Bridget Quinn has done in this book is write, present the history of women's suffrage, as the title says, but it's fabulously illustrated by 100 different artists. And the illustrations, I think, broaden the appeal of the book because they're illustrations by artists that we're basically not familiar with. But it's a very diverse group of artists. And her writing is so welcoming and kind of, you know, right up to the minute. And one reviewer called it snappy writing. And the other thing I think this book does is really look at the history of women's suffrage and look at who we think of as the mothers of women's suffrage. And it talks about their attitudes to other social issues at the time. And again, it's a book that really resonates with everything that's happening today. So I, you know, this is another one of the books that I wanted to talk about because I want more people to read it.
Mm. Now, you said it was an oversized book. I was thinking, okay, this is going to be a book with lots of period photographs and right. that would tell the story. But what you're saying, this is more contemporary illustrations of this yes. story. Well, yes. that's really interesting.
Yep. I think she's done a great job. And, you know, I've had sort of feedback from adults who have read this book and also from teenagers who have read this book. And sort of universally, people have very much enjoyed it.
Now, the subtitle says Winning Suffrage and What Happened Next. So it tells the story of what happened next as women made other strides?
Yes, absolutely. And
so we're talking workplace?
All the way up to Black Lives Matter.
Okay, interesting.
Yes. So, you know, before Seneca Falls, where the first suffrage meetings were held, through the Riot Girls to Black Lives Matter.
All right. Bridget Quinn's She Votes, How U.S. Women Won Suffrage and What Happened Next. Well, speaking of one of those pioneers in the women's movement, you have a classic, which, you know, I have to tell you, I've never read, and it's Gertrude Stein's The Autobiography of Alice B. Toklas. Why on this list now?
Okay, so this book was originally published in 1933, and the reason that it's on the list is that there's a brand new edition of this book, and it's illustrated by one of my very favorite illustrators, Mara Kullman. Really, any book that Mara Kullman does is worth looking at and reading and enjoying. But this book, Gertrude Stein's Autobiography of Alice B. Toklas, is just a delight to read. I mean, I'm not sure, when I would talk about this book to people, they would say, oh yeah, I read that book when I was in college. And like you, Rich, if I read it, I didn't remember it.
Oh, I don't think I ever did.
Well, reading it for the first time, it's just a delight. I mean, partly because the whole premise is so kind of meta in a way, because here's Gertrude Stein writing as though she were Alice B. Toklas, who was her longtime lover. Together they led this great salon in Paris in the early years of the 20th century, the first half of the 20th century. And it was a salon where everyone who was anyone came, American writers, Hemingway, Fitzgerald, artists, Picasso, Matisse, Ford, Maddox, Ford. I mean, anyone, they were so important in Paris. And here's Gertrude Stein writing about it in the voice of Alice B. Toklas. And I'm chuckling because there's this wonderful part in it, in almost every paragraph, there's something that I found just delightful. But in this one, one of the artists who Gertrude Stein really admired had read a pre-pub edition of one of Gertrude Stein's books, and he said that Gertrude needed to put more commas back in the book. And Gertrude Stein goes off on this long sentence in which there are no commas, and to show why you don't need commas. And then at the end of that paragraph, Gertrude Stein writes, But I'll give him two commas. So that was that was just a delight. And then it said, but in the final edition, she took those commas out. So, and it's that, I mean, it's for me, it was one of the perfect books to read during the 2020. And it was certainly one of my favorite books of the year.
Gertrude Stein's The Autobiography of Alice B. Toklas in a new edition featuring these wonderful illustrations. My guest today is Nancy Perrell as we talk books here on Studio Tulsa. The next book is Simon Stevenson's Set My Heart to Five.
Oh, my gosh. So this is a book that you need to really suspend your sense of disbelief. You have to buy into this book. Set My Heart to Five is the first novel by a youngish British writer who works for Pixar and actually worked on the movie Cars. And this is his first novel. The main character in this novel is a bot named Jared, an android named Jared. And the main difference between androids and humans is that androids are seen as having no emotions. But because, for a variety of reasons, this is set a little bit in the future, and it's set at a time when the internet has fallen into disuse because, as the author explains in the course of the book, people gradually forgot the names of their third grade teachers or their first pets, so they couldn't access what they needed on the internet. So Jared, who is a dentist in Ypsilanti, Michigan, and what is a better job for a dentist than being an android and having no emotions? Because, you know, with dentistry, you have to hurt somebody to fix their pain, right?
Right.
So Jared goes to the movies and sees the movie Love Story and finds that at the end of the movie Love Story, he has tears rolling down his face, which proves that he does have emotions. And he decides he's going to go to Hollywood, he's going to make a movie that is going to show human beings that androids have feelings too. It's written, I mean, when I was reading this book, I just kept laughing and reading sections out loud to my husband. It's written as text messages, it's written as like tweets, and then there's this whole wonderful narrative of what Jared decides to do.
That's Simon Stevenson's Set My Heart to Five. The next book, this really sounds really interesting. It's by Natalie Zena Walshots, and it's titled Hinch. It's an office worker for a crime syndicate.
Yes. So this is another one that you need to suspend your disbelief for, because this is a book that has superheroes in it. And the main character is a young woman named Anna. Now, you know, when you're talking about superheroes and the people who run in that circle with them, superheroes have sidekicks, right?
Right.
But what do the bad people have? They have henchmen, or hench women. So Anna, the main character in this book, is a hench. She works for one of the major criminals in the world. And Anna's big challenge is not breaking people's arms or doing any of those things that you would think that hench people do. Instead, Anna's big talent is spreadsheets and digging information out of doing these spreadsheets. And what Anna does, because of something that's happened, she does a cost-benefit analysis of whether superheroes are a plus or a minus in our society. And the plot takes off as Anna and her boss decide to take on the major superhero, whose name is Super Collider.
It sounds pretty funny, and obviously it must be really well written to make a book about somebody doing a spreadsheet.
Right.
Interesting.
And this is another book I just love. but you have to, again, you have to sort of allow yourself to believe in the world that that the author has created.
That's Natalie Zena Walshott's, her book, Hinch. Our last book is a book called The Liar's Dictionary by Ely Williams.
Yes. So this is another book I absolutely loved. This is one of those books that's set in two time periods, both the turn of the 20th century and the present. At the turn of the 20th century, there's a man named Peter Winsworth, which is a wonderful name. Peter Winsworth works for a publishing company that is doing an encyclopedic dictionary, and he is assigned to the letter S. So he is compiling every word that is going to go in the letter S. But he's not enjoying his job. He is just overwhelmed with love for somebody. And so what he decides to do is write unauthorized fictional entries for the dictionary. And these fictional entries are known as Mount Weasels. And the definition of a Mount Weasel is a false entry within dictionaries and works of reference. And oftentimes they're used as a safeguard against copyright infringement. So if somebody puts in this Mount Weasel in their dictionary, you know they have copied it from your dictionary.
Interesting. Now,
yes. So now in the present, there's a young woman named Mallory who is the only employee of this publishing company. And her job is to find all the Mount Weasels in the edition that came out that Peter Winsworth was working on. You know, it is so inventive, this book. And people who love playing with words, you know, who love puns, who love that really kind of smart writing, and, you know, that when if that's what draws them to a novel, is the quality of the writing. This is that sort of book.
People love wordplay.
Yeah.
Well, that's Ely Williams' Liar's Dictionary. Nancy, thanks so much for the wonderful books. It sounds like you were at least busy in seclusion, keeping up with everything that's out there. And thanks for sharing the books with us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Rich. So nice talking to you again.
The woman known as America's librarian, Nancy Pearl, our longtime book reviewer here on KWGS and Studio Tulsa, offering some recommended books for spring reading. Nancy is an author herself, and her latest book is titled The Writer's Library, a series of interviews with noted authors about the books that were important to them as their writing career began. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.